Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione, reviewing the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth by Stephen Mangione. In this review, another in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories, the author will take us along the Camino to Santiago de Compostela, telling of the human search for forgiveness, redemption, and love. Embarks on describing the preparations and the start of the Camino, his meticulous nature is transposed into that of the main character in the book. James writes down his to-do lists and ticks off the tasks on his list one by one. Placing much hope in this pilgrimage, James has faith that it will distract him, take him away from his present predicament, and perhaps provide him with a way of atoning and achieving forgiveness for what he has done. As he has decided to walk the Camino Francés from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in the south of France, James flies first to Paris. The night before his departure, James finds it hard to sleep. This time it was not so much through his usual feelings of guilt and disquiet, but rather due to the excitement of the journey into the unknown that was about to start.
Et sont heureux de trouver une couchette Hôtel du courant d'air Où l'on ne paie pas cher Parfum et l'eau, c'est pour rien, mon marquis Sous les ponts de Paris
In Paris, James purchases all the necessary equipment from the Rive Gauche, where a galaxy of shops that formed the Auvieux Compère provided all that he needed. The reader is then given a brief but fascinating walk across Paris. James walked towards the Seine and crossed one of the bridges to the Île de la Cité. He was keen to walk further to see how far the repair works had got after fire had burned down the roof of the splendid Cathedral of Notre Dame. From a previous visit, he remembered the soaring heights of the cathedral, reaching upwards, the wonderful stained glass windows. He wondered how much had survived the fire.
Sous les ponts de Paris, lorsque descend la nuit, Comme il n'a pas de quoi se payer une chambrette, un couple heureux vient s'aimer en cachette, et les yeux dans les yeux, faisant des rêves bleus. Jules au partage les baisers de Nini, sous les ponts de Paris. Jules au partage les baisers de Nini.
The galaxy of sports shops in Paris, known as Auvieux Compère, offer a tremendous choice of sports equipment of all kinds. It consists of 25 shops, all within a very close radius, each one specializing in a particular sport. But of course it is possible to find most, if not all of the basic necessities in most other countries, including Malta. The main equipment includes a good-sized rucksack, sturdy walking boots, walking poles, appropriate hiking clothing, a hat and a sleeping bag.
Among the items James takes in his rucksack is a moleskin notebook. It is evident that the author kept a journal during his Camino. It is thanks to this that we will learn details of the names, the various stops, the hotels, the Camino albergues, where James meets people from all nationalities and walks of life who share the experience. Once he is fully equipped with the necessary items, James is ready to start the flight from Paris to Biarritz in the south of France. As they flew towards Biarritz, they overflew the Bordeaux region and he was able to pick out the Médoc and the Entre-deux-Mers areas. James was a keen and fairly knowledgeable wine enthusiast. Again, we are reminded of James's knowledge on quality wines. And of course, the author can tell us something about this, and particularly about the Entre-deux-Mers wine area.
Although this is not really pertinent to the story, wine is one of James's interests, as it is mine. The Bordeaux region, which he flies over on his way to Biarritz, is possibly the largest and most important in France, together with Burgundy. It is a region bounded by two rivers, the Garonne and the Gironde, and its tributary, the Dordogne. The main wine-producing areas are the Médoc, Grave, Entre-deux-Mers, and Libournais. Five of the greatest wines come from this region, Château Margaux, Château Lafite Rothschild, Château Latour, Château Mouton Rothschild, and Aubryon.
From Biarritz, James takes a train to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port at the foot of the Pyrenees, where his Camino is to begin. The small town is the converging point for several walks from towns in France, such as Arles, Vézelay, and Paris, of course. Here, at the pilgrim's office, James collects his credencial, the pilgrim's passport. I'm curious to know why this town is called Pied-de-Port. Perhaps Stephen can tell us, and also explain how the credencial works for pilgrims.
Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port lies in the foothills of the Pyrenees Mountains. The name means St. John at the foot of the pass. Since it lies at the base of the Roncevaux Pass, one of the main passes over the Pyrenees Mountains, it was once the capital of the Basque province of Lower Navarre. The original town, which was called Saint-Jean-le-Vieux, was razed to the ground in 1177 by the troops of Richard the Lionheart after a siege. The kings of Navarre then rebuilt the town in its present location. It has always been an important way station on the Camino, since the French routes from Paris, Vézelay and Le Puy converge here. The grueling climb that follows takes one over the high pass and into the first village in Spain, Roncesvalles. Credencial is the pilgrim's passport. Its origin dates back to the Middle Ages, when all pilgrims carried one, and were thereby granted safe passage, allowing them to travel freely along the Camino, avoiding restrictions and hurdles, and entitling them to food and shelter from the inhabitants along the way. The current credencial can be obtained from the pilgrim's office located in Saint-Jean, as well as many other points in Spain and France. The pilgrim then has it stamped at every stop along the way until he gets to Santiago. It grants the present-day pilgrim access to the albergues, which are the pilgrim hostels, along the way, and once he gets to Santiago, it will entitle him to receive a Compostela, which is a document certifying that the pilgrim has walked the Camino. To qualify for a Compostela, the pilgrim must walk at least 100 kilometers, or cycle 200 kilometers if he is doing it on a bicycle. The Compostela is a beautiful document on parchment, written in Latin and in the style of illuminated documents prior to the age of printing.
On the eve of his walk, James attends Mass, and early next morning he walks through the Porte d'Espagne, one of the old gates of the little town, to begin his Camino. He left the hostel and set off towards the Porte d'Espagne and whatever laid beyond. The town was still very quiet, and as he walked through the cobbled streets, he felt excited, but also apprehensive. At the crossroads early on the walk, he chooses the harder route, the Route Napoléon. Thus begins his trail along the Camino Francés. It is James's first day, and the climb is highly demanding, a long trail uphill. But the views were spectacular, with green hills plunging into the valley's depths, while picturesque little villages clung to the slope or nestled in the valley below. James's legs are screaming at him to stop, but he trudges on, his destination for the day being the small Spanish village of Roncesvalles. We can now see a tired James entering the cobbled streets of the small Spanish village, where he looks for the albergue to make sure he finds a bunk bed, a badly needed shower, and a stamping of his credencial. As the hot water of the shower washed over his head and his body restoring him slowly, his muscles started to relax, and the tiredness and pain he had felt, especially in his calf muscles, started to melt away. Refreshed, he walked out for a stroll along the village and attended the pilgrim's mass and blessing. Now James starts to meet fellow pilgrims with whom to converse and to share a glass of wine. Together with Gina, a New Zealander, they ordered a glass of wine cava, the sparkling wine produced in various regions of Spain. Later, James enters the refectory at the back of the bar and experiences his first pilgrim's meal. Although he thought it was pretty basic, it was hearty and healthy food, homemade and satisfying. But the wine that went with it was rough, so he bought himself a glass of Rioja Tinto. Ha! Again, the author hints at James's penchant for the wine, fine wine. Back at the auberge, he started settling for the night in the albergue dormitory.
The first night I spent in an albergue was a bit of a shock to the system. There were some 50 beds with double bunks, and all were occupied. There were men and women of all ages, nationalities and backgrounds. Needless to say, it was not exactly quiet at night, even after lights out. Some of the younger people would go on chatting, but when everyone had finally slept, the loud snoring, creaking of beds and other sounds often kept me awake, until I started to use earplugs. Little by little, staying in albergues grew on me, because it extended and amplified the camaraderie that one experienced during the day. The bathroom facilities could be challenging at times if the provision was not enough to cater for the number of beds. I got around this by making sure that I was up very early in order to beat the morning rush. This meant that I could be on the road earlier and avoid as much of the noonday sun as possible.
Meeting people, different people of various nationalities who leave their normal lives behind and talk about their personal lives is a striking experience which James wishes to share. But there is one part of him that had to remain hidden and which he could not talk about. The following morning, James awakes to a beautiful day, and after breakfast he starts his second day of walking, finding the walk a lot easier than it had been on the previous day. But when night came and he lay in bed, once again, despite the fact that the Camino had provided him with welcome distractions from his troubled thoughts, he still could not forget or put them aside for very long. Still, there are glimmerings of a sense of hope. As James' progress through the Camino Francés continues, his next goal is Puente de la Reina. The author gives us a vivid description of the countryside. The air was clear and he could see the hills in the distance very distinctly, while closer at hand were rolling fields of corn, punctuated in places by thickets of green trees. He could feel the sounds of the countryside envelop him, the wind blowing through the trees, the rushing of water. It was balm for his soul. Communion with nature seemed to have this calming effect. This was a kind of meditation in motion. On the way to Puente de la Reina, he had come to the town of Pamplona, where he visited the cathedral and the museum. Sitting at a restaurant in the Calle Mayor, James got chatty with a waiter, who was only too glad to tell him all about the Feast of San Fermin.
Pamplona is the capital city of Navarra. The patron saint of the city is San Fermin, who was the city's first bishop. The feast of San Fermin spans 9 days, from the 6th to the 14th July. It starts with fireworks and includes a procession of the saint, as well as a parade featuring large puppets carried by marchers, known as the comparsa. But the real highlight of the San Fermines is the encierro, or the running of the bulls.
Resuming his walk, James finally reached Puente de la Reina, and after the usual formalities, seeking a bed at the albergue and having his credentials stamped, he felt the need for company. Here he met 4 Canadian ladies that will feature again in the story, as he will meet them on and off along the way. The long walk had been lonely. Some good company, a glass of cava, and a selection of tapas were welcome. They dined together, and, as they partook of the very drinkable rohia, the conversation became even more animated as they laughed a lot. For the first time, his troubles receded well into the background.
Spain produces some great wines, mainly in the La Rioja and Ribera del Duero regions. There is also cava, a sparkling wine similar to Prosecco in Italy or Cremant in France, as well as some famous liqueurs like Orujo or Licor de Hierbas, while Asturias is famous for its cider, which must be poured in a very special way, with the bottle held up high in one hand, a small liqueur glass in the other hand, and the stream of cider aimed to fall unerringly into the glass without a drop being spilled.
Conviviality and some good wine do help, sometimes. James desperately needs this. Next week we shall let go of James for a while, and we shall see how Maria prepares for her departure for the Camino. Unfortunately, her friend Greta has an unexpected family emergency, but Maria decides to go ahead on her own. When she tried to rationalize her decision, it hinged on the realization that she needed this break now, not at some later stage. She needed to come to terms with her demons immediately. Before her departure, Maria goes to place some flowers on her mother's grave. And with Maria flying to Madrid, where a taxi will take her to Atocha railway station to catch the train to Pamplona, this episode of The Path to Redemption comes to an end. For a repeat of this episode, tune in to Compass 103.7 on Thursday, 15 hours. In the next episode on Monday at 18:30, we shall enjoy the Spanish countryside and get to observe Maria as she makes her first acquaintance with Spanish ways of life in Pamplona. Thank you.